The number one secret ingredient is authenticity. You aren't going to be successful if you are trying to sell something that you're not. Even if you get the person to make the purchase, even if you get them to show up at the front gate or you get them to show up at the front door, if their experience doesn't match the expectation that you provided to them, then you're not going to be successful.
Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where we discuss the latest trends and challenges facing the attractions industry today.
We chat with some of the top leaders in the field and provide resources that will help develop your career in this great industry.
I am Josh Liebman. I am obsessed with the guest experience and helping attractions make that their top priority for success.
And I'm Matt Heller. I am passionate about organizational effectiveness, leadership development, and employee engagement.
Now sit upright, hold on tight, and get ready for the Attraction Pros Podcast. Hey, Matt. I'm not even going to ask how you're doing today. But I know you're going to say it anyway.
You don't want to know?
No, I don't want to know.
Too bad. I'm fantastic.
Good. Why are you fantastic?
Well, because we have a great guest. We're recording a podcast today. What could be better?
And the sun is shining. At least today, at this moment, where I am, where you are, and in a central East Coast,
the Washington D.C. area.
Exactly, yeah. Matt. Quick question for you.
Yeah.
If we were to look at all the amazing interviews that we've done on the Attraction Pros Podcast so far, the last 180 some odd episodes, what do you think has been the biggest key advice that has come out from all of the guests that we've had on?
So I'm going to tie this to what we're going to focus on today a little bit, because okay. We got some pretty amazing advice today. Honestly, it's take your own advice.
Okay.
Right? Because we've heard so many people talk about so many amazing things. And of course, I can't remember them all right now. I'd have to go back and listen. But when you have advice or when you have experience, but you don't apply it to your own situation, you can get yourself into some hot water. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the biggest takeaways that I've taken from all of these interviews is take your own advice.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I think, and I completely agree with that, but one thing that I feel like has been a recurring theme, and with no element of redundancy whatsoever, I think every time we hear it, it just drills the point home even further, is the concept of authenticity.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, we've talked to a lot of the smartest people in the business. And I think that that is just one thing that comes up so much that if you're listening to the podcast, if you're a fan of the podcast and you've been listening for a while, you probably have absorbed that concept of being authentic, whether it is from a marketing standpoint or an operation standpoint or just a personal connection standpoint. So that I think is one of my biggest takeaways from this amazing conversation that we had with Debbie Evans that is coming up in just a minute. Debbie from Evans Marketing Partners, just an amazing conversation about marketing, about crisis communications. So this is an incredibly important interview and conversation that we have with her, and as well as tying in that authenticity throughout everything that you do.
Well, and what I love is how she weaves in authenticity, not just for organizations, but for individuals. You know, and we talk a little bit about how to market yourself. If you're in the job market right now, what's the best way to market yourself? Well, it comes back to some of those really core concepts, like be who you are, be authentic, you know, make sure that your presence on social media, which is where a lot of people will see you, is really who you are and what that message is that you want to get out there. So I love that message and I can't wait to hear more.
Yeah. Well, I think that we should just get right to this amazing interview right now.
Here we go. Debbie Evans with Evans Marketing Partners. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Attraction Pros Podcast. How are you doing today, Debbie?
I am doing great. The sun is shining. And I know hopefully it's going to be shining when this actually airs, but we've had so much gloom and rain in the Washington, D.C. area that I'm just so happy to see the sun and see people ready to get outside and have some fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk about getting out and having some fun. What does Evans Marketing Partners do? And tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I have been in the hospitality industry essentially my entire career, though I didn't know it as the hospitality industry when I got started serving frozen yogurt at the local yogurt shop. I've always been in hospitality. So I started out making frozen yogurt. I became a lifeguard. And then when I was in college, through mentorship from my professors, I sort of learned why I was so happy at work. And it's because it's the hospitality industry. It's sort of in my DNA. It's what I, you know, kind of love to do. And so I'm one of those rare people that actually ended up getting my degree in the field that I work in. So I actually have my degree in hospitality administration with a focus in marketing. And it was some great internships, great friends that I made while I was in college, while I was doing internships that really led to my career. And so now I take the decades of work that I've done with different organizations, and I share that with clients, and I share that with partners in the areas of marketing communication. So whether that's ongoing support of marketing communications, a product launch, training, I do a lot of media training, a lot of crisis communications workshops, helping organizations refine and put together their crisis plans, and really just I'm a helper, and I get paid to help people, mostly help people have fun.
Debbie, what I find interesting with that is with your background in hospitality and pursuing an education in that, I'm seeing a lot of parallels. My first job was serving frozen yogurt. I pursued a degree in hospitality and then, you know, kind of went on from there. What was it about the marketing aspect of hospitality in particular that sparked your interest that you're able to use with your with what you offer today with your crisis communications and your media training and overall marketing as it relates to hospitality?
So a lot of people are really good with numbers. A lot of people are good with technology. I am not good with numbers and not good with technology. But what I am good with is words. I like to write. I like to put pictures and words together. I like to strategize. I like to look for consistency. I like to execute events. I like to bring different people together with different areas of expertise and collaborate. And marketing really gave me the opportunity to do that. I fully admit I kind of stumbled into being exposed to that part of the business versus something that's more sort of operations or guest facing. And it turned out to be a good fit. But Josh, I actually, at the ripe age of 26, I felt like I'd kind of reached a career roadblock. And I wasn't sure if I was doing the right thing or what the right next thing was for me. And I purchased What Color Is Your Parachute? So this was like the 1990 something version of What Color Is Your Parachute? And it's updated every year. But what that encouraged me to do and what I did do was to really look at what am I good at and what do I enjoy doing? Of course, that also points to what are you not so good at and what do you really not enjoy doing? And so at that point, it really helped me solidify the hospitality industry is where I want to be. And marketing and communications is the path to follow. And so that really was super helpful to me. And it helped me kind of zero in on the opportunities that would allow me to be happy in what I do for a living.
I think that's so great that you were able to find the sort of the Venn diagram of where those two things come together. And I think that's what a lot of people search for. I will say as a brief aside, I just learned something about Josh because I didn't know he started off doing frozen yogurt. So that's something new I've learned. But Debbie, I also want to talk a little bit about crisis communication because that's such an important part of what we do when, as we are communicating not only with our guests, but our employees. So can you kind of give us a rundown of what are some of the things that people should be thinking about with their crisis communication plans? And especially if they don't have one, where do they start?
Well, the good news is that now, thanks to technology and people's really recognition of what a good crisis communications plan and how you handle a crisis, what that can do for your brand. There are a ton of resources available online. In fact, IAAPA has a great outline, a great template on the website that's available to members. And there are lots of organizations that have their plans available online. And then lots of colleges and universities have, you know, case studies and information online. So it's not hard to find a template to start with. That's really good in that you know, there's nothing more challenging than thinking you're inventing the wheel. Don't need to reinvent the wheel, but also we need to not be intimidated by crisis communications and by putting together a plan. It doesn't have to be 144 pages with, you know, tabs and dividers and links and subsections, right? It can be one page depending on what your organization is and what your exposure is. So the first step is acknowledging that you don't have a plan and you need it. The second step is to get over the fear. It's really not scary. It's really not that hard to put it together. People pay me to come help them, and that's great, and I love it, but it's really not rocket science. What I bring to the table is experience. So whatever the crisis is, the chances are I have probably seen it, probably dealt with it. When I was with Six Flags, in the corporate communications office, we had 39 parks in 7 different time zones. And so there was probably some level of crisis happening, you know, every day of the week and at least, you know, kind of one of those time zones. But for organizations that don't have someone in your company that's, you know, sort of that's their main responsibility, it's completely doable. There are resources out there. Just start. Look at a template, identify what your team is. And it could be something as simple as a flowchart that tells us when we have a crisis, here's what we're going to do. Here's who's going to make decisions. I will also add, and Matt, you didn't specifically ask this, but the single biggest mistake, other than not having a plan, that I see organizations make is analysis paralysis, is not making a decision. And colleagues looking at each other and saying, is this your decision? Do we need to call somebody else to get their approval? Who has permission? Whose responsibility is it to make the decision? Because not making a decision is, in a crisis, absolutely, you know, the worst decision.
So I would imagine part of that plan, like you were saying, is deciding or determining who makes the decision. So that's written on that flowchart, or that's written on the piece of paper. And so you say, okay, you, Debbie, director of marketing, you're going to make the decision. So now it falls to you. So there's no question. And you don't want to have a question in that moment when there is a crisis happening.
Right. And if it was me, then I'm going to get the information from all the experts, because I'm not going to be an expert in every single aspect of whatever may be happening, you know, from an operational standpoint. But yes, if my name's at the top of the list, then I'm the one responsible for gathering the information and for making the decision and for executing the decision.
So how much does a crisis communications plan change depending on the nature of the crisis and I would say the size of it? Because when we say the word crisis, that I can imagine there's a very big spectrum there from things that are quick, let's nip this in the bud, to obviously the much larger issues that, you know, need to be addressed with much higher urgency. So across all of that, those different types of crises that a business could encounter, how does that communications plan change? Or is it the same? It's just the nature of the plan that, or the nature of the communication that is updated.
Yeah, the plan absolutely stays the same. That's not to say that your plan will never change, right? You're going to learn more information. You're going to gain experience. Regulations are going to change. So you do need to update the plan continually, but the plan itself doesn't change based on the actual crisis itself. You may move much more quickly through the steps if it's a small sort of one and done, you know, relatively manageable sort of crisis versus something that's going to go on for multiple days. Plan itself doesn't change. And one of the things that organizations can do to help make it easier to respond in a timely fashion in terms of communications in a crisis is to think about what are the crisis scenarios that happen most often? And what are those that are most likely to happen? And go ahead and pre-prepare a short statement or even a key message or a statistic or a fact that, that is relevant to that topic, so that when it happens, you already have somewhere to start. You're never going to just be able to copy and paste that and use it, because as you said, Josh, every situation is different. And sometimes something really small, like a trip and fall, depending on how it's handled, either by staff or by the guests or by witnesses, a trip and fall can be something that never really reaches crisis status. It can also be something that turns into a multi-day crisis situation. But the way you handle it is going to be the same.
You know, I love that, Debbie, because you're talking about being proactive, right? And certainly having a plan is a proactive measure, but even thinking about how you might handle different situations, that's being proactive too. And so when you get into that situation and it's a crisis and we're kind of in fight or flight, now we have to figure out, okay, what do we do? Well, it's already in the plan, right? We've already thought through that statement. We've already thought through what we might say to the press initially, or we might, you know, we've already kind of thought through that. So, you know, I really like that piece of advice. Something I would have ever thought of, honestly, because, you know, that just wouldn't have crossed my mind to have that kind of preparedness. So that's why we have experts like yourself. But I'm also curious, you know, kind of along the lines of what Josh was talking about, is how often should we practice the crisis communication plan? Because it's one thing to have it on a document. It's one thing to have it in a binder up on the shelf, but actually putting it into practice as a test, how often should we do that?
Potentially every day. And that may sound a little bit unreasonable, but you definitely want to revisit the plan every season, updating personnel, updating phone numbers, updating contacts with fire and EMS, updating SOP. So you absolutely need to do that at a minimum once a year. If your business is seasonal, then you want to bring the team, everybody that's in that plan, if your name and phone number is in that plan, you need to come together as a group to review that plan. And but then every day you may have the opportunity to update that plan. I always recommend that even if you really have a strong belief that this crisis is not going to make it to the news media, or it's not going to make it outside of the team members that were part of it or the team members that were a witness to it, never underestimate the value of the grapevine and the power of the grapevine. So even if it is something small, use it as an opportunity to go through that crisis plan, to go through those steps, to write the statement. If a parent called, what would we say? If the media called, what would we say? If we decided we needed to communicate with all of our frontline team members, how would we do that? What would we say? So use those as an opportunity to practice the plan, even if it's something that you feel like you can, you know, kind of handle and make it go away. And then whatever you learned based on that, update the plan with those key takeaways.
So are we able to go even a little bit deeper to get, I would say, more granular or more specific into particular words or phrases that you recommend or don't recommend? And I'll tell you kind of what sparked this question here. Several years ago, I was on the guest communications team at Universal Orlando, and this was primarily a guest services function, but it was external communication. We were doing a lot of emails, a lot of letter writing. And I remember in the manual when I was in training and just starting to get onboarded onto the team, there was a sentence that I read that said, write as if your words will end up on the front page of the New York Times, because if you're not careful, they will. And I thought that was such an important statement, just from a communication standpoint, that even if it's not a crisis or any type of communication, of how quickly the actual phrasing and the tone can completely change the nature of what it is that's being communicated when trying to resolve any type of issue.
Thank you for that question, because that brings up one of my favorite points to really try to help people be aware of, is that just because crisis communications doesn't appear in your position description, that piece of paper that's on file with HR, the thing that you signed off on when you accepted your position, it doesn't mean that crisis communications isn't your job. So what you just described is an opportunity for every team member to potentially manage a crisis. So that's a great example. And that's also great training. That's also great advice. In general, when it comes to a crisis, you want to think about words that are inflammatory. So one of the things that is a phrase that's used a lot in the news media is if it bleeds, it leads. Yeah. So think about blood, if you will, right? That it's attention getting, it's riveting. It calls people, you know, it says, hey, this is something kind of really to look at. So think about those words that bleed, if you will. And those are the words that you want to stay away from, or those are the phrases that you want to stay away from. And I'll share with you an example that's probably almost 20 years old, but was a tremendous aha moment for me. I was working with a park that has animals. And I love animals. I love the people that work in animal care. I love the animal behaviorists, their passion for doing things, you know, the right way. And one of the trainers was injured working with an elephant. And it was a really, really severe injury. Fortunately, 100% recovery, went back to work. Everything turned out great. But this was such a major medical situation that the local EMS, Emergency Management Services, PIO, did interviews with the media. And I don't normally recommend that you want to actually do live interviews with the media in a crisis situation. But this public information officer did an interview. And this was a situation where the trainer was actually, and I'm going to use a word that bleeds, the trainer was gored by an elephant. So it was a through and through wound. Very, very serious. And the public information officer categorized it as a penetrating abdomen wound. How much better does that sound than the trainer was gored? And so that really was so dramatic that it stuck with me, that our words really count and they really make a difference. So you want to make sure that your words don't bleed.
Definitely. So Debbie, you give out a lot of advice to folks, but you mentioned in an email that there was a story about a time when you didn't take your own advice. So would you be able to share that with us so we can learn?
Yes. So one of the things that I talk about is kind of this bridge between operations and kind of the marketing and PR people, and how we are so good at what we do because we do it every day and because we're passionate about it. There aren't many of us who are doing this that aren't passionate about it and that aren't really sticklers for following the SOP. So sometimes we're not getting lazy, but it's easy for just us to just assume that we've checked all the boxes, that we've done everything, because we get up and we do it, you know, kind of every single day. And so one of the things that we often overlook is that we need to have a backup plan for our plans. And I always talk about this, have a plan, have a backup plan. Is everybody's phone number saved in your phone? Great. What if your phone battery dies and the power's out and you don't have a way to charge it? Do you have a backup way to power your phone? If your computer crashed and you need to go use the computer at the FedEx store, do you have the password and the username for your website so that you can log in and, you know, sort of change the operating hours? And so I've been a consultant for so long that I forget that these same things apply to me. And I have a client that had a gap in their staffing. A marketing person left, had not refilled that position. And so I was, you know, kind of filling in, doing a little bit of extra duty. And I forgot to get the login and the password to the website. Really shouldn't be that big of a deal. We have an agency, as a lot of people do. You have an outside agency that updates your website, manages your website, is your website builder. I think I've mentioned before, technology is not my thing. And lo and behold, an ice storm came and the attraction had to close. Not only did the attraction have to close, had to close on Valentine's Day weekend. And I didn't have access to the website because I forgot to get the username and the password. And so fortunately, it didn't turn out to be a huge problem. The guests weren't really concerned. I was able to, use social media channels, go in and message every client that had pre-purchased vouchers. So I spent hours, messaging all of the pre-purchased guests. But you can bet that next Monday that I reached out to the agency that handles the website, and I got the username and password, and I went in and figured out how to put that banner up that says, due to inclement weather, we're not gonna be open today. So I did not follow my own advice, and luckily there was no tragedy that came from it, but it sure would have been much nicer for our guests if I had been able to put a little banner up on Valentine's Day that said, sorry, we're closed.
Yeah. That's a good point. Thank you for sharing that story and the importance of having a backup plan, which can sometimes sound easier said than done, right? Especially if you haven't experienced the emergency before, or that need for that backup plan to actually have that foresight to say, okay, I need the username and password if it's never, if it wasn't second nature before that. So how do you predict what you might need in the future when sometimes, everyone is in a position at some point where you don't know what you don't know, because you just don't have that history or that, mm-hmm. That need for it in the past.
And you even think, well, that's not going to happen to me. That's never happened before. That's not going to happen here. That's never going to happen to me, which is why it's so important to go through the list of all the things that you know could happen, so that you're minimizing the opportunity for you don't know what you don't know to come up and surprise you. And then, of course, it's always great to have friends, right? And so probably once a week, someone who I've worked with in the past, or we're friends, or they're not necessarily a client, but someone will call me and say, hey, what do you think about this? And that's actually something that I really love doing. Obviously, I love being a consultant and I love helping my clients, but I love to be able to work in a field and an industry where we can call each other. So if there's somebody I desperately need to get in touch with, and I know that they recently were on an Attraction Pros podcast and I don't know how to get in touch with them, I'm going to reach out to Matt and Josh, and I'm going to say, hey, can you tell me how to get in this touch with this person? And so, Josh, never be afraid to phone a friend.
Writing that down.
That's good advice. That's good advice. But I'm also sort of hearing a parallel between what you talked about having a backup plan, and what we talked about when it comes to crisis management, because that's kind of your plan, and then having a backup plan to that. So I think there's a similar methodology, at least, that I'm hearing in there. I'd like to switch gears just a little bit, because sort of the proactive part of your job is marketing, right? Telling stories, mm-hmm. and putting words and pictures together, like you said. And that's one thing that I've always felt was one of my not strong suits. Like, I just don't understand how that happens. Like, I'm good at words in terms of writing a story and writing a blog, but putting it out there that someone's going to want to buy from me, or I'm going to attract attention to a product or something, I've always felt that was one of my weaker points. So I'm curious, from your standpoint, what is that, and I, just to use the term special sauce, right, that you have, that you can put those things together that attract attention in a way that engage people and want them to be more a part of that attraction or that product or that service?
The number one secret ingredient is authenticity. You aren't going to be successful if you are trying to sell something that you're not. Even if you get the person to make the purchase, even if you get them to show up at the front gate, or you get them to show up at the front door, if their experience doesn't match the expectation that you provided to them, then you're not going to be successful, which then leads to what is truly the most effective marketing tool, which is something you are both experts at: creating a great experience that leads to positive word of mouth. I worked with a park, and this has been a couple decades ago, but this lesson holds true. I worked with a property that literally spent tens of millions of dollars in paid advertising, which at that point was mostly radio and television commercials, because there wasn't, the digital world was not then what it is now. Literally spent tens of millions of dollars with launching a new product, and in a very big metropolitan area. And 10 years later, you could still find people that lived within 20 miles of that facility, had no idea it existed, because they hadn't quite mastered that magic of word of mouth and the amazing creative, right? And they're wonderful advertising agencies that create incredible commercials, right? Great creative, pure cinematic magic. That is not me, by the way, but there are organizations, there are agencies that can do that. But if it doesn't match with the product and it doesn't match with the experience, it doesn't matter how much money you spent on that commercial or how many ads, advertising awards it may have won, it's not going to work. And so I think the authenticity is absolutely, it's the secret sauce, and there is no magic. You know, there's no magic to that, but there's absolute magic to what you help your clients and what you help the industry achieve, which is team members and environments and policies and training that really help us deliver what it is people are coming to experience when they come to our attractions.
So you made this really great point about the expectation versus the experience. And I love that example that you gave of this huge marketing campaign that I guess really didn't align with what the actual business did. It sounded like there was a huge disconnect between whether it was marketing or operations, or whether it was the offsite experience versus the onsite experience. And I'm curious if you can talk about really how to make sure that organizations are able to weave those together so that they're really one and the same. I always like to think that marketing is part of guest experience and guest experience is part of marketing. And those two really are the exact same thing, especially when you're talking about creating experiences that result in that strong word of mouth, because then that is marketing that is directly tied to the onsite experience. So what are some ways that attractions can really leverage that to make sure that people are having a great experience and are therefore talking about it?
One of the things we talked about with crisis communications is that while it's not in most people's position description, it's absolutely part of their job. And it's the same with marketing. We've always looked at this in terms of safety as an industry, that safety is everyone's job. But in fact, guest service is everyone's job. Marketing is everyone's job. Crisis communications is everyone's job. Crisis management is everyone's job. And so, Josh, you've really just sort of uncovered a new secret, is that there really isn't necessarily secret sauce to marketing. I guess we're not so special that it really is everyone's job. And the most successful organizations that I have seen is when there are no silos between our departments. When I started working with amusement parks and theme parks and water parks about 20 years ago, we were incredibly siloed. Finance stayed in their lane. Actually, finance wants to be in everybody's lane, but maintenance stayed in their lane, operations, aquatics, marketing, sales, everybody sort of had their own lane and didn't their own silo, and we didn't cross those silos. And that's really not the way to do it. That's not the way to be the most successful. It's we all work together to create what is the most positive marketing tool, which is word of mouth. Now, that being said, you still need me to help with your ads and your marketing and your email and your website and your public relations and your product launch. But the secret sauce is it's really in the team members. It's really in that frontline guest experience.
And I think one of the crucial pieces of that too, especially as you're tearing down silos, is to make sure that everyone is on the same wavelength with what's the story that we're telling and what exactly this business does. When we go back to that expectation versus experience, the example that I think of was a park that I worked at many years ago. I won't cite it by name, but it's no longer a business. And I think that this is one of the reasons why it's not, is because there, I mean, there was such a defined silo between you have marketing who wants a particular guest demographic who is going to be most attracted to come visit the property and therefore is going to bring the largest group and is going to spend the most amount of money. But it didn't align with what actually happened when they got there. So they did a good job of bringing people in initially, but then when people came, they said, well, this isn't what was in the brochure, basically, right. Metaphorically and maybe a little literally as well. But I think there's just that importance of making sure that you're telling the story externally so it's the right people and you're not attracting the wrong people, even if they might be the best for business.
Yes, yes, exactly. And that's even more true now than it was, last year. Thanks to technology, everybody can communicate directly with everyone. We don't have to rely on the news media to deliver our news to us. We can get the news directly from Matt when he and his buddies are out at a restaurant and he's reporting on it via social media. And so the technology and the sort of digital communication has definitely changed things. But what has also changed things, and I hate to say this because we're probably all tired of hearing about COVID-19, but COVID-19 has helped us in particular in the hospitality industry in quite a number of ways. And I'll also add that it's incredibly tragic that our industry has also been one of the most hard hit in terms of loss of business and loss of jobs. And there's so many of us fighting every day to help those organizations and get them the help that they need and make sure we have all of our attractions open. But what it has done for us is, number one, it gave every single one of us experience in crisis communications. Mm. Whether you were open when the pandemic hit and you needed to communicate what precautions you were taking to keep your guests and team members safe, whether you were open and you needed to close down, whether you had not yet opened and you needed to communicate when you were going to reopen and what you were going to do. So whether it was social media, news media, your websites, really every single one of us now have some experience in crisis communications. Which is a plus, but it also forced us to communicate directly with our team members and directly with our guests in a way that has never been more important. We have always said that we're in the business of fun, but we're also in the business of safety. Nothing is more important to us than your safety, than the safety of both our guests and our team members. And some people were interested in that, and other people just kind of trusted us and assumed that it was safe and it was fun and that was fine, and they didn't really care. Now everybody cares, and everyone is listening and everyone is paying attention. And so I think there's a plus to that is, that we've all worked those muscles. We've all exercised. We've exercised looking at a plan, looking at our operations, having our team members and our guests and our parents and our local health department and our government officials and the people that have to give us the authorities that give us the open. We've had to make sure everybody is hearing the same story. Everybody had the same message. So now we've all practiced, Josh, exactly what you described, which is, are we out here saying one thing publicly, but the experience is different? Are we saying one thing via advertising and saying something else to our team members? We all absolutely had to get on the same page with COVID-19.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing even more sensitivity to that. You know, when somebody says, hey, we're going to be clean and we're going to be doing physical distancing, there's a much more, people are probably more apt to share if that's not happening versus if somebody says, we're gonna give you a great magical experience. Well, that that scale can be a little different, right? Mm-hmm. What's magical to one person may not be magical to another. But if people are not physically distancing or people are not enforcing masks, that's more of a black and white issue, right? So right. I totally agree with being on the same page and people maybe even being more hypersensitive to that. But I also want to ask a little bit about employees, because you mentioned that so many people have lost jobs or, you know, have been cut out, you know, cut their hours and things. And a lot of people are out there looking for work. So from a marketing standpoint, how do people market themselves to be the most advantageous to getting a job and to being the person that they want to, you know, that the organization wants to call back, especially when it's so competitive right now?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good talent on the market right now. And a lot of people have lost their positions. There's also a lot of great opportunities, lots of great positions, new positions being created, thanks to organizations kind of looking at their business a little bit differently. But I will go back to my personal experience when I was 26, which is the what color is your parachute? Look at what you're good at, what you're not good at, what you like to do, what you don't like to do, and what is your story. For most of us, our number one marketing tool is our LinkedIn page and how you communicate via LinkedIn. Is it a reflection of who you are? Is it a reflection of your story, or is it a menu? Organizations like ours aren't looking to it's like shopping for a car, right? I want this package. I want this number of miles, you know, this, miles per gallon for gasoline. Employers have a list of some of those things that they're looking for, but they're really looking for the car that when they sit in the seat and put their hands on the steering wheel, it feels right. Am I going to enjoy driving it? Is it going to get me where I need to go? But is it really going to be something that is part of an experience? And so use this opportunity to tell your story. I know that may sound a little bit Pollyanna-ish because quite honestly, I know there are people that just need a job and they just need a paycheck. And I'm not the right person to give career advice or advice on, you know, just how to land a job that's going to take you to the next job. But in terms of looking for something that's going to be a good fit for you is be your own best marketer and be authentic. And an organization is going to hire someone that's going to fit within their organization. If you are all about your brand, and you are sharing pictures of, you know, yourself with your car and your, you know, are you posting pictures of yourself with your new car, or are you posting pictures of yourself with your kids, right? Think about how every communication tells, you know, a story of who you are. And not that one story is right or wrong, right? Maybe an organization is looking for that person that thinks they're the greatest thing since sliced bread and is, you know, bragging, if you will, via social media. Maybe not. Maybe they're looking for someone who is just passionate about what they do and is a hard worker and is really more, you know, sort of about the good of the order. But you're marketing, you know, marketing yourself right now, but you have to know who you are before you can do a good job of telling your story, or you're going to miss part of that secret sauce, which we talked about, which is authenticity.
Yeah. I think that's just such an important piece really for everybody, whether you are looking for a job or whether you are, you know, on the supplier side and looking for business, or whether you are just trying to be the best that you can be as far as of building a network within the industry or among your peers. And I think that's a great point of, you know, you say, you know, using LinkedIn as your personal marketing tool and not just using it as a menu, as looking down and just it's more than that bullet pointed list of, hey, here are the things that I can do. And I think that there are so many people out there that might be looking for something and they're saying, well, I can do this and 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 I can do this. And maybe there's kind of a thread line keeping all those together in some capacity, but it also makes it sound like you're everything to everyone versus an inch wide and a mile deep and saying, I am this. And if you want the best person who can do this with the most passion and the most enthusiasm for it, then that's, you know, you go all in on that. And, you know, that is not just how the LinkedIn page is represented, but all the, you know, content that you put on that. So I think there's a lot of parallels between what businesses can do from a marketing standpoint and what individuals can and should be doing. Mm-hmm.
Right. The one in you're absolutely right. You need the menu, but it's not about the menu. It's how do I put the ingredients together, right? You know, what does it look like? Who am I? The other thing I will say is, oh, forgive me. It just totally escaped me. A really important thing I had to say that was advice. Oh, okay. I'm back to it. So I'm not a career counselor, but I recently was was asked by a keynote speaker at a conference. Well, I wasn't just asked. All of the attendees were asked to come up with our own personal hashtag. What is our legacy? What is our why, if you will? What drives us? And where that landed for me is that I like being a helper, that I want to be a helper. That is what makes me happy. Fortunately, that's, you know, sort of what I do for a living. But for those who are looking for jobs right now, my one bit of career advice is to be a helper, be someone that people can count on. So whether that's offering your services, giving free advice, helping someone by being a sounding board, introducing someone to one of your contacts that maybe doesn't have a position available for you, but maybe they have a position available for someone else. Maybe you're not the right fit for the job. Recommend someone else that you do think would be a good fit. And that help absolutely comes back around.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody the other day about what people can do to kind of keep themselves motivated. And it came back to that same thing, help somebody else, because it feels so good when you can help somebody else be successful. And maybe that's just coming from another helper like yourself. But I've found that when you put your energy into other people and their success, it really does come back tenfold for you. So that was actually my advice. Like right now, if people don't know what to do, go find somebody to help. You know, yes. And when I look at organizations that have a really thriving volunteer program, you know, and they, you know, are encouraging their team members to go out, volunteer, take time away from work and go help somebody else that is less fortunate or that just needs assistance in some way. Again, that's very motivating. And I think that lines up with, okay, what are you good at? What can you help somebody with? You know, like you, I'm not going to give anybody advice on spreadsheets and finances, right? But find those things that you're good at that you can provide some help with. I think that's great advice on so many levels.
It is. It's great emotionally. It's great psychologically, but it also happens to turn out to be good for your career.
Exactly.
So speaking of helping, let's turn this around. And Debbie, who has had the biggest impact on your career? Try to make a segue. I think it's there.
You got it. Nice job.
Who or what has had the biggest impact on your career?
It's a great segue. I have had such a fun career and I am so grateful for it. And it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the people that helped me. From the college professor that recommended me for an internship at the Georgia Department of Industry, Trade and Tourism, to the people in the hospitality industry that I met during that internship that helped me land my first job after college. So 100%, the people who have helped me along the way get all the credit for all the fun and all the traveling and all the great people I've had the opportunity to meet. But one in particular was Debbie Nowser. So there was a time when Six Flags went through a really big transition and was acquired by Premier Parks. And at the time, Six Flags did not have a corporate communications office, really didn't have a corporate marketing team. And so Debbie became the head of communications for Six Flags worldwide at the time. And I had only been in the amusement industry for a couple of years. But Debbie saw the helper in me. And so she, you know, reached out and gave me an opportunity to step into a corporate role, which really gave me the opportunity to help parks and people and suppliers and vendors and the news media all around the world. And having that opportunity really, you know, made a huge difference for me, you know, in my career. And since then, I have been really committed to giving back, whether it's helping an intern, writing a letter of recommendation, mentoring, giving advice, speaking to college classes. It really is the helper in us. And I think that's part of like the hospitality industry. Like we get paid to help other people have fun. And at the same time, we get to have fun, you know, while we're doing it. But I just can't say enough about the great people that I have worked with and worked for along the, you know, across the years. And not everybody has the opportunity to have an amazing boss or work in a job that they love. And in this industry, we're so fortunate to be able to do something that we enjoy and to give back.
Absolutely. And what a great way to kind of wrap this up as we talk about authenticity and, you know, what has gotten us to where we are, because certainly you being authentic to who you are has been a, you know, a big part of that. And then being authentic to thank and to recognize all the people that have helped you get there. I think that's a wonderful message as well. And I know Josh and I have talked about that as well, you know, who some of our favorite bosses are or mentors or people that have helped us get to where we are. So I really appreciate you bringing that up, Debbie. So this has been a fascinating conversation and I really thank you so much for your time. If people want to know more about you or about Evans Marketing Partners, where would you send them?
I would send them to my LinkedIn page. and they can also email me. It's very simple, Debbie, which is D-E-B-B-I-E, at evansmarketingpartners.com. Also a member of IAPA. They can find me in the IAPA directory. They can look for me, you know, on my website. While I work in marketing, I don't really market myself because it's just not who I am. Right. And so if you want to know how to get in touch with me, you can find me on LinkedIn or just ask somebody who knows me, because if you're a friend of a friend, then you're a friend of mine.
Very good. We'll put all that in the show notes as well.
And that ties in nicely with providing that great experience that leads to word of mouth. So I think it all comes full circle. So Debbie, this was excellent. I really appreciate your time today. This was a fantastic conversation. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And to everyone out there who is listening and watching, just remember, we are all Attraction Pros.
Thanks for listening to the Attraction Pros podcast.
Make sure to subscribe so you can tune in when new episodes release. And even better, please leave us a review on iTunes.
For more information, visit attractionpros.com.